welcome to Alternative Stories podcast. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about sleep and everything related to sleep. We're going to find out if it's better, truly better rather, to early to bed and early to rise, etc., etc. So we're going to be deconstructing a lot of these myths. We're going to be understanding what it means to not be able to sleep, to have nightmares. And it looks by the conversations that we've had before this that it's going to be a two-parter. So stay tuned. So to talk about sleep, we have my co-founder and co-director and spouse, Paras.
Hello.
Paras is a counseling psychologist. He also teaches and does a lot of work as well as, I don't know, takes care of Zoe with me.
Absolutely. No, that's the most important job of all.
Yes. So tell us a little bit more about what your interaction or what your challenges with sleep are.
So, I mean, for the longest time, and I think again now, my bio on Twitter has always mentioned that I'm a sleep enthusiast. So I love my sleep. And unfortunately, for the past few years, I mean, I would say since about 2018, 2019, my relationship with sleep hasn't really been the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been thanks to some medication that I had to start taking and a recently, you know, diagnosed or a recently discovered sleep-related issue that I live with, which really, you know, prompted me to deep dive into the relationship of sleep with different medicines,
mm-hmm.
the relationship of sleep disorders and, you know, physical and mental health, and really the whole gamut of all of that. I mean, I did always know about this at a superficial level as a student of psychology and as somebody who teaches psychology. But, you know, as they always say, that there's, you know, no better way of knowing it than experiencing it yourself. So, yeah, so I think I do have a lot of personal experience, and which, of course, prompted me to talk to, you know, a lot of other people, clients also who struggle with their sleep. And, yeah, I mean, we discovered that there are definite common themes that are there in terms of the sleep-related issues that a lot of us seem to be facing, you know, these days. And it just sort of, you know, goes under the carpet. People don't really think about it. I mean, in fact, you know, it's a topic of so many jokes, so many memes, so many tropes about millennials and Gen Z to be sleeping badly, to be tired all the time, to be hopped up on
of
caffeine.
Course. I mean, the number of times people have said, I can sleep when I'm dead, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the hustle grind culture, being hopped up on caffeine, pulling all-nighters, pulling 18-hour, 20-hour shifts, and, you know, all of that basically has been something which is...
So let's just get it, I think, out there that this is not okay, right? We're starting off with the premise that says that doing all of this, you need sleep to function or function well. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no denying the fact that sleep doesn't really have any replacement. There's no supplement that you can take that will replace the restorative effects of sleep. There is no hack, or there's no, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's no trick or hack in which you can, you know, divide up your sleep into small bits and not suffer some consequences about it. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff which claims that is the case, but at least in my knowledge and in my experience as a therapist, doesn't seem to be useful or helpful at all. I mean,
I think it's safe to say at this point there isn't enough anecdotal or even scientific proof to support that you can get away with not sleeping enough or breaking up your sleep, etc., right? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but as of now, we know that getting those hours of sleep in the night is very essential.
In fact, there is evidence which points to the contrary and says so definitively. Like, there is research which says that lack of sleep and lack of quality sleep are both detrimental to health. So there's definitely conclusive evidence which talks about how, you know, the quality and quantity of your sleep not being the best really, really has an impact on your health.
And we're both very, very, what do you say? We're examples, very good examples of that. Both of us can get really irritated when we don't have enough sleep. And you've experienced that part of me and I've experienced that part of you. So it's, at least we have anecdotal evidence to support that.
And we know how grumpy Zoe is if you wake up in the morning. Like really, really early.
Oh my God, yes. Actually, that's a good example. Actually, that's a good question to start off with also. That's what is sleep? Like, we know that most animals sleep. There is proof that even plants sleep. So I know how temperamental my plants are in the evening. So what exactly is sleep? I mean, what happens and why do we need sleep? I think if we can start off from there.
Sure. I mean, our body, you know, goes through different cycles of different functions during the day. Mm-hmm. And at, you know, different points in the day, there are different, I would say, hormones or different chemicals that our body secretes to facilitate different kinds of functions that we need to do during different times of the day. So, I mean, when I say different cycles or different functions that our body needs to be doing at various points in the day, I'm referring to how when you wake up, the body, stimulates your bowel movements and your system ensure that, obviously you're sleeping, so you've been holding it in and you need a fresh start to the day. So your bowel movements are or triggered immediately. There's a physiological process involved in that. And I think I'd read somewhere that you know, in the morning, in the first half an hour, 45 minutes after you wake up, your bowels contract much more than they would at any other point in time in the day, which is why, you know, for most of us, within the first hour of waking up, we need to use the washroom. Post that, of course, the hunger cycle is stimulated. Because if you're going to function for the rest of the day, then the body needs its fuel. The body needs something to start the day, and it needs energy to burn. So that's going to happen.
Of course.
Again, at different points in the day, your body is going to secrete different chemicals to increase your level of alertness, to the point where you'll have, a point where in your day you'll be the most functional or most productive.
Mm-hmm.
I know that this is different for different people.
Correct.
Like, I know that I may be awake and I may be doing stuff, say, from 7 to 10 or something, but my body really kicks into gear only like 10 onwards, you know, and that's something which is different for different people. So everybody has these... Mm-hmm. We can colloquially say that these are your power hours, where your body is the most alert, your brain is the most alert, you have the most energy, you have the most productivity. And then, of course, as you know, your energy is depleted or it's a little lower, you feel hungry again. There is usually a dip in your alertness and your productivity after your first large meal of the day, after lunch.
Especially if you had a lot of rice, of course.
Of course, of course. And then by the end of your workday, of course, what starts to happen is that your body starts winding down, you know. And it is connected to some extent, at least, to the circadian rhythms. And what we mean by the circadian rhythms is like, we have our internal body clocks, which usually are aligned with the rising and the setting of the sun in the place that we are at.
When you say place that we are at, you mean geographical location?
Geographically, yes. Geographically where we are at, and also temporally in terms of the time of the year, what season is it? How much sun are you getting at that time, you know, in your place? So usually your body, you know, will find it harder to sleep when it is bright outside. Usually you'll find it hard to stay awake very, very long when it is dark and very quiet mm-hmm. outside. So your body is usually designed to follow the circadian rhythms like that, that it's inbuilt rhythms. And these are aligned with the seasons as far as possible. So by the evenings after sunset, what happens is that, you know, I'm not getting into the specifics of it scientifically because that will just be too academic. But imagine mm-hmm. that there's chemical A, and chemical A is responsible for your alertness. And mm-hmm. then there is, you know, chemical B, which after it reaches a certain threshold, it triggers your sleep cycle. So as the day wears on and, you know, it gets darker and darker and then sunset happens, you know, the levels of chemical A keep dropping. And then mm-hmm. when it is fully dark, it reaches a point where chemical A's levels are dropping and chemical B's levels are rising. So, and they have a complementary function also. The presence of chemical B, you know, breaks down chemical A and makes the levels lower and lower. So that after mm-hmm. a point, chemical B, which is supposed to trigger your sleep cycle, first reaches an mm-hmm. equal level. So you now mm-hmm. may be awake, but you may not feel like very active or very, you know, energized. So this would probably, you know, colloquially, you can say that this is the time of the day where 8 to 10 p.m., 8 to 11 p.m., where you're home, you just want to sit on the couch, eat something, watch TV, and then just, mm-hmm. you know, wind mm-hmm. down for the day.
So it almost feels like chemical A and chemical B are like on a seesaw.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And I mean, they, you know, they wash out each other is what the idea
correct,
is.
Correct, correct. Is yeah. chemical B, or rather chemical A, that makes me wake up? Is that coffee?
It is triggered by it. Caffeine is triggered by it. The chemical which is responsible for, you know, waking you up. I mean, of course, there's not just mm-hmm. one chemical. There's a bunch of them. I mean, there's serotonin, there's dopamine, and all of them.
So there's a set of things that wake you up, make you feel alert. And yes, so things like coffee trigger it and make you feel more awake.
Yes. So, I mean, it's basically, you know, for somebody who's not familiar with neuroscience that much. And again, I'm not a neuroscience expert, but from whatever understanding I have as a mental health professional, it's basically the fact that there are parts of your brain which are responsible for waking you up, and they trigger activity mm-hmm. of certain chemicals, and those chemicals trigger the activity of certain other chemicals, and that's basically how it happens. So it's a concerted effort. It's not just, you know, like two chemicals on the seesaw, but that's a good analogy to understand it with.
I mean, there's a lot that is happening in our bodies that are still not understood, or we understand it at a very superficial level. And what I remember from what I had learned is that sleep is one of those things, is that we understand consciousness and sleep very minimally, and newer things are constantly being understood about it. And yeah. it's fascinating. So
it is.
Yeah.
It
so is. Right now, what we understand, and if I were to summarize what you just said, is basically there's a lot happening in our body throughout the day. There's circulation, there's digestion, there is, I don't know what else, but respiration.
Yes, you would die without it.
Yeah, but with COVID. So there's a lot happening in our bodies constantly. Mm. And that creates a kind of fatigue. And at the same time, there are chemicals and there are neurotransmitters and there are hormones that are being secreted that is helping us wind down. And that is at the peak when we're falling asleep.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff is happening. So we also spoke a little bit about circadian rhythms. Mm. We spoke about what happens, you know, there's an internal body clock that seems to be working. So I remember in school, I used to wake up at 6 a.m. on Sundays as well. And I'm associating a lot of that with the circadian rhythm. And even during summer vacations, towards the end of the summer vacation, my grandmother would start waking me up slowly, slowly towards the school time. So that the first day I was not like absolutely sleepy in school.
Yes, absolutely. So that's smart, right? That's the wonderful thing about our brains. Our brains are, you know, completely designed to keep us alive and keep us optimally functional to whatever schedule or routine we are doing. So our brain adapts. I mean, our brain can adapt tremendously. I mean, it is one of the most adaptive parts of the human experience. That, you know, if you're eating badly, if you are sleeping badly, you are in a high amount of stress, let's remember that your brain still does manage to do its bare minimum functions in whatever resources you're giving it. Of course, it's not going to do an optimal job, but your brain still manages to keep you alive. So if there's one thing that the brain is able to do, is it's able to form habits and routines and stick to that. So if you do something for a considerable amount of time, your brain is really, really good at repeating that. I mean, the corollary of that is also that if you are, you know, not sleeping well for a long period of time, your brain gets used to not sleeping well for a long period of time.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you start fixing that, your brain adjusts to that. You know, we call this as hedonic adaptation, which means that as soon as, you know, things improve, your brain is able to come to a, you know, to that level. The brain can set the benchmark higher now and say that, okay, now I'm sleeping well, so let me optimize the functions that were you know, suboptimal earlier. And similarly, there's a reverse of that as well, that if we are not, you know, optimally getting food, rest, and, you know, other kinds of relaxation, our brain will also adjust for that and be like, okay, things are suboptimal. So let me, you know, cut off certain things, which the brain would then consider as non-essential. And that's where you have, you know, your different sleep-related health challenges that start to emerge. We'll get into the details of that going later. But I think I just wanted to touch upon something that you asked me at the start. And what exactly is happening when we are sleeping? I mean, I did answer what is happening during the time we are awake. But in terms of what is happening while we are sleeping, so again, our bodies are really, really good at making it seem as if nothing has changed, you know, over a period of time. But there is, you know, there are cells which are growing and cells which are dying off and being shed every single second, right?
Correct.
Again, the same goes with our muscles. The same goes, you know, with our bones. It's not that our bones and our muscles are constantly, you know, the same. Our muscles through the course of the day have micro tears which happen.
Of course.
Of course, our bones and our joints take a lot of activity during the day as well. And of course, there's the digestive part of, you know, the work that happens. So this is at the physiological level. At the psychological level as well, there's a lot of, how would I say, there's a lot of consolidation of your memory. So think about it like this, like, you know, I mean, the best example that comes to my mind is that at like 2 a.m. every night, our you know, WhatsApp on your phone will be like, hold on for a few minutes, I need to sync everything. I need to back up everything, and then you can, you know, use it again. So some version of that is happening with our memories as well. Like, okay, these are the experiences that I had during the day. Let me just file these experiences under different, you know, memories that I have. Let me just take stock of all of these experiences and consolidate that so that, you know, when we wake up the next morning, it's not like we're waking up with a blank slate. We wake up with continuity in our memories. And that happens.
That's actually a great analogy, right? I mean, I was just thinking about this optimal thing as well. And like the example that you said earlier, when you spoke about hedonistic adaptation and you said something about how the brain goes into suboptimal performance because of lack of sleep or anything else that might be annoying the brain. And I mean, when you're talking about WhatsApp kind of taking a stock at 2 a.m., I just remember that sometimes when my battery is low, it does not back up.
It doesn't do that. Yeah.
So your phone's like, okay, this is not essential. I'm going to save battery for other things. And that kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, I hope
or if you're not connected to Wi-Fi, it does that. So again, it says that it's going to take a lot of toll on limited resources that you have right now. So absolutely. I'm not going to do it right now. I'll do it when, like you said, when the phone is plugged in again and when, you know, you are on a good, stable connection again. So, yeah.
Since we're talking about what happens when we're sleeping, one of the most important things for me that happens is dreams. So, and you're talking about consolidation of memories. Often I see things that have happened or I have thought about in the day happening or seeing them in my dreams. And so what is happening? Like, why am I dreaming? What are dreams? I mean, that's a very meta question, I feel like. What exactly are dreams? It also feels like an interview question. Like, what are dreams? What are your dreams like?
It reminds me of Losing My Religion, which is by R.E.M., right? I mean, the band is R.E.M.
Yes, it is.
Wow. And they just keep saying that was just a dream. That was just a dream in that song. Yeah. Fun fact. Okay. I didn't realize that connection until right now. I don't know how. actually, speaking about what happens and why
okay, do you want to kind of explain that joke? Because we haven't touched upon R.E.M. in this podcast at all.
R.E.M. is basically one of the phases in your sleep. So again, if you've ever studied basic psychology, we learn something about the sleep cycle, which again is the lay term for it. The you know, the slightly more technical term is multiphasic sleep cycle, which means that your sleep goes through phases or different cycles. Each cycle is around 90 minutes of time. So you go from, you know, light sleep to deep sleep, you go into REM. REM is basically what is called as rapid eye movement. It looks pretty creepy, but it does happen. Like, rapid eye movement is, you know, your eyes are closed, but your eyeballs are moving left to right rapidly.
And if you have dogs or cats, you can definitely see this on them. I don't know.
You can see this if you're sleeping next to somebody and you are awake, it would be very creepy to do that. But if you were just watching them sleep,
just
and
stare at them. Yeah, hey, come on, Edward did it to Bella so well.
Sure, I will pretend.
Do you
to get
know that,
that
reference?
Anyway, I know it's from Twilight. Wait, he's a vampire. Why would he not sleep? Like, why would he?
He doesn't sleep. Vampires don't sleep in Twilight.
Exactly.
They also vampires also disintegrate when they go into the sun. So well.
Yeah, I mean, and the other dude is a wolf, so wolves are also awake in the night. So, yeah. Anyway, coming
he's not
back.
Not a wolf. He's a werewolf.
Sleep cycle. Don't distract me. Okay, we have different phases in our sleep. And one of them is rapid eye movement sleep. Rapid eye movement sleep is when we are dreaming. You know, that is the time where, you know, we have these dreams. And rapid eye movement sleep is the deepest, stage of your sleep. You do need REM sleep because your REM sleep is the most refreshing sleep. This is the time in your sleep cycle where your body is doing the most repair work in terms of your muscles, your cells, in terms of your memory consolidation also. It is, you know, that's what's happening at that point in time. So one of the things that, you know, a nerd term about sleep that I learned when I started, you know, researching on it is something called as REM latency. Right. So REM latency basically means the time between you falling asleep and your first REM cycle. Right. the longer that is, I mean, the longer the time period between you first falling asleep and you going into a REM cycle, the worse your sleep is. So, for example, if your REM latency in terms of hours is, say, 3.5-4 hours, that's a really bad measure, because that means that you're going to have one, maybe two REM cycles at the max, and REM cycles are not extremely long. So you're not going to get a lot of restful sleep. That also means that you're going to take a longer time to fall asleep from the time you are actually tired and your body is ready to go to sleep. And the depth of your sleep is also going to be really, really bad. So
what is a good REM latency?
Again, it differs from person to person. But mm-hmm. if you were to say, you know, in terms of falling asleep, you should, you should fall asleep within the first 20 minutes of you hitting the bed. That's a normal sleep latency. Terms of, you know, your REM onset sleep latency, again, this is mm-hmm. different, again, for different people. What we are saying is that usually within, you know, say the first 90 to 120 minutes of your sleep, you should have, your first, REM phase.
My second question about this is, now how do I measure it?
This is usually done through, what is called as a sleep study. You may have seen sleep studies portrayed sometimes in movies and shows, and usually it's done really, really badly. But it is basically, you're hooked up to a bunch of apparatus, and it's usually done in a hospital or in a lab, wherein there are, there's a pulse oximeter to see your heart mm-hmm. rate and your oxygen levels. There's usually a cannula, the pipe thingy, which is, next to your nose to see whether you're breathing in and breathing out okay. So that is another thing. And of course, there are electrodes to map brain activity. So again, without getting into too many specifics, at different phases in the sleep cycle, the electrodes will record different kinds of waves. There's alpha, mm-hmm. alpha waves, there's beta waves and things like that, right? So different waves are associated with different stages in your sleep cycle. And, that is the graph, again, on a scale of time is measured, and it is measured at what point in your sleep cycle did you go into that level of brain activity, or when did those waves start? So that is how it is correct. Scientifically measured. The mm-hmm. hack version of it, which can give you like an estimate, which is, I would say, enough for, a normal person, would be if mm-hmm. you have most of us, who are, tech savvy, have some kind of like a smart wearable device these days. And correct. Your smart wearables usually have sleep tracking, which automatically happens. Again, they're not the most accurate, but they can give you a fair estimate of, when did you fall asleep, in the sense that your movement reduced significantly. What amount of time in the night did you not move at all for 15, 30, 45 minutes? Some of them are mm-hmm. now even claiming to track REM sleep, but I think that that's just a proxy reading that they're doing on the basis of the fact that some of these can monitor your heart rate and your SpO2 now. So I think a mixture of your movements, your heart rate mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. your oxygen levels and your blood pressure levels, which some of these measure now, would be able mm-hmm. to estimate what stage in the sleep cycle you are in. So it's definitely a good idea to know how well you are sleeping. But even if you were to do this the old-fashioned way, if you were to just keep a track of what time you went to bed, around what mm-hmm. time approximately did you go to bed, and without an alarm or without any kind of any other person waking you up, when do you usually wake up, you will see that there is a consistency to it. You know, we do all have a rhythm. So to understand your baseline rhythms, you could just do this for like a week. Just note it down. Take a notepad and note it down that this is the time I went to sleep and this is the time at which I woke up on my own. And for most people, you will see that, most adults, you will see that this is somewhere between 6 to 9 hours of sleep. Again, this is what it will be. Most of us will average somewhere around 7.5-8 hours. So that's why usually you say get your 8 hours. But this, it's not a hard and fast rule. Some of us are okay with 6.5-7. Some of us need 8.5-9. But yeah, you will see that without prompting, your body will wake you up in approximately this amount of time. So yeah, so there are these basically these different sleep phases that are happening ideally every 90 minutes. And hopefully your body is going through these complete cycles and, you know, and going through multiple iterations or multiple cycles of these 90-minute cycles through the night so that you can have, you know, adequate amount of sleep. So that's why we say not just sleep quantity, we also say sleep quality.
So basically what we're seeing right now is that your sleep happens in multi-phases. There are different things that happen, and REM is a kind of sleep that's the most restorative, the most relaxing, the ideal kind of sleep. It happens a couple of times in the night. It should happen more than that.
I mean, you should have three or four phases of REM sleep.
You should have a few, correct. You should have a few REM cycles in your sleep. Not your entire sleep can be absolutely REM, but a few REM cycles is good. And so, I mean, I also want to say that, you know, sleep is supposed to be relaxing. It's supposed to be something that you wake up in the morning and feel better about.
Yeah.
If you're not feeling that, if you feel like, and Paras already said that it's, we need around 6 to 9 hours. Is that what he said? Or 7 to 9 hours of sleep?
Yeah, I mean, 6 to 9 hours is the window. Like I said, most of us will be okay with the 7 to 8 hour window. And like at least 90 to 120 minutes of that should be good, solid, deep sleep.
Correct. So we are going to talk about sleep issues in the next podcast. But I wanted to say that if you think that you're sleeping much more than this, what would be an outlier, Paras? If I'm saying 9 is normal, most of us fall into this category. But what is the concern? When should I start worrying? What are the outliers?
Again, it's very contextual. If you had a very difficult day, if you had a long, tiring day, you may want to sleep 10 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours even. Or if you, you know, if you're somebody who's not a morning person like me and it's the weekend and you're sleeping, you know, 10, 11 hours easily, that's something that is okay. Or at least it's explained. Certain medications, of course, will you know, make your sleep longer. And again, there's nothing that can be done about it. You will need to sleep longer than the average person if you're taking some medication. So I would just say that, you know, you don't look at every single day. You would look at a trend over a week or a fortnight to see how you are sleeping during that period. And I would say that, say, over a period of a month, at least if you have seen that you're consistently sleeping lesser than 6 hours or you're barely getting, you know, 3 to 4 hours of sleep, that definitely means that you are in a significant amount of sleep debt. And over a period of a month, without any known reason or any explained reason, like, say, medication or, you know, something like that, if you are consistently you know, feeling tired despite 11 to 12 hours of sleep, this is definitely a concern that is there. And again, one last thing I want to add to that is that, you know, it can also, you know, one of the things that we also have to look at is when are you feeling sleepy? Like, for example, I may still be okay if I have slept at one stretch for like 8, 10, 12 hours. But if you are feeling sleepy and tired throughout the day, right?
Okay.
And you feel like if I were to shut my eyes for a few seconds, I will fall asleep. And that's happening at any given time in the day. That is definitely telling you that, you know, you are sleep deprived.
Correct. So, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of things. So, I mean, one of the things that I think that you mentioned that was very important for me is that it's not about one day or one week. It needs to be consistent over a period of time. So on Sundays, obviously, you're going to be lazy. You're going to be, I mean, we're recording this on Sunday, so we're not being lazy. But you are going to sleep much more on days that you have more time and more leisure. And being in bed is not equal to sleeping.
Correct.
If you're going to be doing things. So I think there's a lot of unpacking to do here for each person. But if you are feeling tired after sleeping, if you are, you don't feel rested after waking up almost every day of a month or longer, I think it's time to at least bring it up in therapy. If you are in therapy or see what else could it be, what are the changes that have happened? Like, one thing I know for sure is in times of immense grief in my life, I have coped with it through sleep. I think we spoke about it in the podcast with Ala also, that my coping mechanism, my favorite coping mechanism is to sleep. And obviously, if I'm sleeping 15 or 16 hours at that time.
It's the opposite for me. Yeah. Like, you know, I remember that when I was in school and when I was in college, exam periods meant that I would, only be able to study through the nights. Exam days, I would barely be able to sleep. I would only be able to eat after I finished my exams. So I think, you know, as is the case with most indicators, you either have very little of it or you have too much of it as a coping. Correct.
Absolutely. And this is also something to say, right? I mean, in busy households, I mean, there's a lot of context to be given. If the only alone time that you get is in the night, you're going to take it. You might want to be awake for a longer period of time to have that time to yourself, to have access to shared resources. Maybe that's the TV, maybe that's the computer. Maybe that's just privacy that you get in the night because everyone's asleep. There's a lot of social context around this. So don't take it just at face value, but don't underestimate the need for sleep as well.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that our culture has done is that we talk about sleep in a very flippant way.
If I can come in here, there's also a lot of morality attached to sleep. You know, we think that people who are sleeping longer than usual are just lazy and, unprofessional. And people who are, working late hours or waking up first thing in the morning are really, exemplars. I mean, we have a certain person who brags about, working 18 hours every day for the last 8 years or so. And sleeping.
I wonder who you're talking about.
Of course. And then sleeping during long distance flights. And staying awake during the trips. So there's a lot of fetishization of having very little sleep and being awake all the time.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I read recently while preparing for this podcast was how sleep is a social justice issue. And I think that that was a very important the way to put it, the gig economy, people who work more than one job or people who are forced to work 18 hours because of the gig economy.
Or shift work. Or people who have to do shift work.
People who live really far away from physical offices because they can't afford houses near, the closer to their workplace. Yeah. All of this is, makes sleep more complex of an issue than just a physical issue. It is a social justice issue. I've always looked at women who do cleaning of vegetables or chopping of vegetables in the train. But I, as an issue, but I didn't see, you know, the sleep, people, who, women who go to sleep in the trains necessarily because they have to start doing work as soon as they go home.
Yeah.
As a necessarily a social justice thing. So it's very interesting for me to have understood that in that, you know, to understand sleep in that way. And I am very cognizant that we all started this conversation because we thought about dreams and we haven't really answered that question. Because I think that's an interesting kind of thing that there are certain symbols that keep coming up in dreams for me, at least. Is that common? Okay, let's start with more. Like, what exactly are dreams? Why do we dream?
That's a you know, that's an entire area of study. And right from the...
So are you saying you can't answer that question in 20 minutes?
I don't think I can answer that. And I think there'll be like an entire podcast to itself. But I can definitely say that right from the time of Freud, you know, psychotherapists have always hypothesized what the role of dreams is. So Freud, of course, you know, has a book on dreams itself. And Freudian psychoanalysis talks about the fact that that there is, you know, the conscious, the subconscious, and the unconscious. And that the subconscious and the unconscious can only be accessed in certain altered states of consciousness, which he talks about, sleep and hypnosis being two of them. So basically, what Freud says is that dreams are the material in the unconscious or the subconscious mind, which is, you know, which is experienced by us. There are other, you know, therapists or analysts which have a different take on, you know, dreams. So, for example, Gestalt therapy, which is, you know, again, Freud was in Austria. Gestalt's is from you know, is from Germany. So Fritz Perls is a German psychotherapist who gave us Gestalt therapy. And Gestalt therapy talks about the fact that there is no conscious, unconscious, subconscious. There is no past and future. Everything is in the here and the now. So if we're experiencing something you know, in our from our past today, in the form of flashes in our mind, in the form of intrusive thoughts, or in the form of our dreams, he basically says that it's just unfinished business. It's just something that's been on your mind that's going on. And of course, there's also, I mean, there's also stuff which basically just says that dreams have a lot to do with what's going on in your mind on a daily basis, stuff that you have watched, stuff that people that you have been speaking to, people that you've been thinking about, will show up in your dreams quite often. So I can definitely say that dreams have been an area of fascination and interest in terms of psychotherapy. There's also, of course, you know, postmodern therapies which talk about the role of nightmares, recurrent nightmares, and how that is associated with people who have gone through trauma. So, you know, people who are survivors of trauma have not just dreams, but also reliving of their trauma during the daytimes. You have the concept of intergenerational trauma, that you may see certain kinds of symbols or violent experiences, which may not even be your experiences. This can be, you know, your the intergenerational experiences that you have had. And there's a lot of interesting stuff that's coming up over there, you know, in the area that intergenerational trauma can also be experienced in the form of dreams. There was, again, touching upon the area of trauma, there was a landmark longitudinal study which was done in America called the ACEs study, which stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And again, you know, the ACEs studies also talk about the fact that children who faced adverse childhood experiences as adults later on are more prone to anxiety disorders, traumatic disorders, have worse health outcomes and sleep outcomes, have worse functioning in terms of their memory as well. So, you know, remembering and forgetting dreams, reliving of painful memories, you know, all of this is very closely tied to the world of dreams. So, like I said, you know, each of these can be a series of podcasts, but there's a lot that's going on, you know, in terms of our dreams and why are we dreaming certain things, and why are certain things showing up again and again. Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing that I realized is that sometimes if your body is in physical distress, like for example, when you are sleeping, then mm-hmm. your body may, or your brain may trigger some painful or terrifying stimuli so that you wake up. So like, mm-hmm. for example, people who have incontinence, you know, mm-hmm. which is basically difficulty in controlling your bladder, your brain may wake you up because your, you know, your bladder is not able to hold anymore. Or let's say if you have any, you know, obstructive respiratory conditions, whether mm-hmm. it is something called a COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, or if you have sleep apnea, or if you just have like really, really bad allergies and, you know, stuffy sinuses, then when you're, you know, not getting enough oxygen, or if you're sleeping in a position where your throat mm-hmm. and your, you know, your nose is closing up, your brain may actually show you, you know, traumatic images, or you may wake up with a start because literally your brain went into panic mode and had to jerk you out of your sleep. You know, so there are a lot of these connections that we have.
So I think what I get out of this is that dreams are an essential part, or at least a part of your sleep cycle. And whether you remember your dreams or not, they happen.
Yes.
Again, dreams might be important cues about what's happening in your body, what's happening in your thoughts throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in therapy and you have distressing dreams, then you might want to bring that up with your therapist.
Definitely.
Or consider therapy. Dreams are not to be ignored, because they, like Para said, they're important cues to what might be happening. So don't dismiss your dreams. Don't dismiss your sleep issues. And yeah, I think the reason that we also decided to go with a two-parter is because there's so much with sleep that's unexplored. And to even understand, like, we take sleep so lightly that we don't understand it so well. And then to, you know, put this in with sleep issues, we thought that it would be too much. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we're going to discuss in the next part.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be talking about insomnia, apnea, narcolepsy, sleepwalking, sleep paralysis. A lot of these things, we're going to talk about what it means for adults, what it means for children, what it means for adolescents. Because there are certain issues that creep up, especially during special times in our life.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about all of that. What we're also going to do is we're going to talk about personal experiences with sleep. So what it means to get a sleep study, what it means to be diagnosed with a sleep issue. Mm-hmm. All of that is going to happen in the second part.
Absolutely.
Until then, if this podcast or anything that you've heard so far from us has wanting you to go to therapy, you can go to alternativestory.in. Book a session with one of our therapists. We have full price as well as pay what you want sessions. So all of that is available to you. Any parting thoughts on sleepers as of now?
I mean, like I said, it is something that we do need to pay attention to, not just the quality, but also the quantity of our sleep. We need to mm-hmm. pay attention to how we feel after we wake up. We need to, and you know, since we ended on the topic of dreams, it's not just the content of your dreams. Again, it's how vivid they are. It's how frequent they are. You know, so it's how realistic they are. How, or, you know, how confusing or disorienting that they can get, which also needs to be paid attention to. Of course, I mean, I know we are going to talk about at least some of these things in our next conversation.
Absolutely.
But definitely, I think, you know, if your sleep is not fulfilling its basic function of restoring your energy and restoring your body for another day of activity, then it's time to really pay attention to it and do something about it.
Thank you for listening into the Alternative Story podcast. We would love to hear your thoughts on this episode. You can share them with us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. If you would like to book an appointment with us or be a part of one of our support groups, please log on to alternativestory.in. Until next time, bye-bye.